Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, I mean, come on, we are in the Alleluia season. We've got plenty of good news to sing about in great exaltation. And St. Paul tells us to constantly think about these grand and glorious things of our faith all year long, not just the Easter season. And I think we have permission to talk about them, too. That's what we try to do on Call Me Catholic every Saturday. So glad you've joined us. And in case you didn't know, you've arrived at Call Me Catholic, a fast-paced hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. In fact, please do. Jimmy G is my happy engineer and chief fact checker. He is happy because baseball season is underway, and he's having a hard time keeping his mind on the show.
Yes, I love me baseball season. It's my time of year.
That's your spring fever, isn't it, Jimmy G?
Pretty much, yes.
Baseball season, Eastertide, all reasons to rejoice right now. Baseball and Easter, both seasons share a theme of expectancy and hope. But the thing is, we know the outcome of Easter. We don't know the outcome of the baseball season. So it's anybody's game, really.
Does Easter have a box score I can look at in the paper the next day?
We could do that for you. Oh, okay. I'm sure the Bishop Robert Barron has that somewhere on his social media collection. Yeah, so it's both seasons are very compatible, Eastertide and springtime.
I like the way you put that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm trying to accommodate your passion for baseball when we get into this season, because I know you got one little bit of your eye is always going over there to the screen to see who's the newest.
My wandering
score.
Eye.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure why.
My wandering eye of baseball scores.
I didn't mean it that way. Okay, but it's anybody's game right now in the season. So it also happens to be National Gardening Day today. Legit. Mm. Actually is. Mm. Seems fitting that National Gardening Day should come in mid-April. That's when the ground has pretty much thawed out. You can actually dig into the dirt again. My son, Frank, who's our oldest son, was home for Easter. And since he bought his first home like 2 years ago in Portland, and he's become a homeowner, he is really obsessed and interested in gardening. Mm. You know, in our backyard, the yard he grew up in, you know, all he used to care about was finding the right, you know, worms in the dirt or, you know, getting the grasshopper to scare me. But now he goes out there and he says, oh, that's a manzanilla tree. Oh, that's a Kalianoma sunset. You know, he can identify everything and he's very, very interested in
it. It's the pride of ownership.
Well, it is. Yeah. And I think it's a really nice outlet. It compensates for, you know, kind of he has a very intense job in marketing and advertising. So it's a really nice way to balance his lifestyle. And I think gardening is a very, very healthy
I agree.
Hobby. He noticed right away that my freesia bulbs were starting to peek up out of the ground. They multiply every year, which is kind of fun. And you forget where they are. So they just kind of spring up. You'll see this little yellow blossom or purple or, and you know, I think a bulb erupting out of the hard, dark earth is one of the most perfect illustrations of spring, of the resurrection, life after death, after our winter. If you look at a crocus bulb is just a pretty ugly, dead looking thing buried in the ground. And the fact that it gives birth, I mean, actually rebirth, to the most beautiful blossoms of vibrant colors after being totally cut off from the light for more than half the year is one of God's really vivid metaphors in nature. Hmm. And there's a lot of gardening references in Scripture, especially through Holy Week and Eastertide. We know God suffered in the Garden of Gethsemane. Well, it all started in the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the anguish in the Garden of Gethsemane. And then when Mary encountered Jesus at the tomb, she thought he was a gardener. Which is a good thing. Speaks well for gardeners. So happy National Gardening Day, everybody. Now, the scripture readings are so rich in imagery and snapshots during this Easter season. In this weekend's gospel, it's the third Sunday of Easter, Jesus appears to his disciples. He just shows up and he says, peace be with you. You know, obviously they were kind of scared. They were terrified, actually.
Mm-hmm, right.
But then he calms them and he shows them evidence of who he is, his wounds. And he says the words that I have heard so often as a mother of three sons. He says to them, have you got anything to eat?
Right.
And they gave him a piece of fish. I kind of think you could have gone a little bit further than that. Get a little bread, a little pita bread, Maybe some hummus.
There were no drive-thrus open, so, you know.
But this is the original model for Christian hospitality. I mean, to serve Jesus food. I mean, how awesome is that? And that's why hospitality is very implicit and important in our Christian character, offering hospitality. Those early Christians, they were all about opening their homes to strangers, providing food and shelter and a safe haven for Christians who were fleeing for their lives from the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these homes, I mean, they were homes. They were actually the first churches, the first Sunday schools, the first parish centers, really. And I think those homes established a precedent that should be perpetuated in our Catholic lifestyle, that of hospitality.
Right.
And our guests today have certainly expanded that model of Christian hospitality to provide hundreds of individuals and families an affordable home here in Orange County, actually central and southern California, too, where housing is well above the national average. And the homeless population is really growing in epidemic proportions. Tom Morrow and Tracy Pajot both play important roles in the work of Caritas Communities, a nonprofit organization whose goal is to develop and maintain quality and affordable housing and neighborhoods, really, for Central and Southern California residents in need. We are going to hear more about their very successful and noble mission in just a minute. And then in our Chatting with Catholics segments, we're going to revisit a conversation I had with some second graders. By the way, I may be lisping a little bit because I broke my tooth on Easter.
Oh, boy.
I'm smiling so you can, I'm giving you my best hillbilly smile here. So I'm lisping a little bit. I can't get it fixed until for a couple of days. So giving our listeners a little visual for my linguistic.
We'll post
handicaps.
A picture.
No pictures. So anyway, in Chatting with Catholics, I'm going to revisit a conversation I had with some second graders at St. John the Baptist School here in the Diocese of Orange about preparing for their first Holy Communion, which of course is the highest form of hospitality our church can offer. Nourishment through the Eucharist. But first up, it is our Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week will examine some of the qualities of Catholic Christian hospitality, a tradition established by Jesus himself. There is a sentence in Hebrews that I particularly like about this subject of hospitality. Hebrews 13, it says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." So I love that. It's not always practical to entertain strangers, but we can perpetuate what our first Christians demonstrated when they opened their doors to the disciples and fed them and gave them shelter. It's a beautiful tradition that we need to carry on. So here we go. My top five ways we can emulate the early Christians through the practice of hospitality.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Okay, number five is be joyful. I mean, that is got to be the number one identifying emblem of Christian behavior is joy.
Do I have to?
Yeah. You mean he's coming over again?
Eeyore.
Yeah. You empty the dishwasher. No, but be joyful and have a smile on your face. And that shouldn't just be in our homes, but in our parishes, too, and out in our communities. I mean, we are the face of Jesus, of Christianity. Of
Amen.
What he wanted us to perpetuate. So when we welcome people with hospitality, we should be joyful. And think about the heavy burden that those early Christians had, the fear that every knock at the door could be a Roman soldier, you know, pulling them out and torturing them as a way of intimidating other Christians in their
place. Exactly.
So if they can be joyful, by golly, we can be joyful. Okay, number four, food. Let's see. You know, offer some good food. Cooks never lack friends. That's a great motto.
Right.
But, I mean, have a little something always in your home, whether it's some crackers, whether it's some nuts that you can offer somebody that drops by. It just, I love that gesture. It sort of says, you're welcome here. And let me go into my cupboards and find something for you. And, you know, in early Bible days, they always could find something. In this Sunday's gospel, they found a piece of fish hanging around for Jesus. But, you know, they probably brought out some, like I said, pita bread and hummus and olives and a few other things. But offer people just even the smallest gesture of nourishment, I think.
When I was young, it was Oreo cookies. So yeah.
Always. I know kids
Oreos.
Are easy to please. You know, you could pull out popsicles. You can pull out anything. As adults get a little more discerning in their taste.
Exactly.
But food is mentioned constantly in the Bible as a resource for hospitality. So, you know, we never should underplay that dimension. Okay, number three, be flexible, be open. Conditions don't have to be perfect for you to offer perfect hospitality. I love some of the stories in the Acts of the Apostles. There's the stories about where the disciples stayed because they were completely dependent upon the kindness of strangers, to borrow a Tennessee Williams quote. You know, Jesus sent them out and said, you know, knock on doors.
Right.
And if they don't welcome you, you know, shake the dust from your feet.
Right.
But they were completely dependent upon hospitality from the homes, the towns where they visited. And there's one great story where Paul and Silas are out preaching to a large crowd, and a woman named Lydia, she's named in the Acts of the Apostles, and she was called a seller of purple. That's a niche market, seller of purple.
Wow.
But anyway, she was a seller of purple. She was a pagan, or maybe she was a Jew. And when they were preaching, she kind of raised up her hands and said, I want to be baptized. Stepped aside, please baptize me. Hmm. And after she was baptized, she said, hey, if you find me worthy now, I'd love for you to come and stay at my home. And apparently Paul and Silas stayed with her, and she provided for them. They probably had some great conversations. So there you go. That's one other way. Being flexible is implicit in the Christian character of hospitality. Number two, talk about interesting things. You know, come on, try to steer the conversation towards things that are enlightening, or as we say in the opening every week from Paul to the Philippians, you know, be gracious, dwell on the good, the lovely, the positive mm-hmm. in your conversations. And I think as a host, sometimes it is your responsibility to kind of steer the conversation
right.
at the table.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what their conversations must have been like. I mean, I'm sure they talked about their travels. They talked about their encounters. They talked about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And through the conversations, they were edified and informed. So let's keep our conversation kind of upbeat and toward the good stuff.
I'm with you on that.
Elevated. Okay. And number one would be to be inclusive. Can you imagine how those early Christians had to welcome anybody, every age, you know, all genders, all people from social statuses? You know, a great couple in the Acts of the Apostles, models of Christian hospitality were Priscilla and Aquila. And they were people of very noble Roman heritage, and they took in every which way kind of person.
Hmm.
So don't be discriminating in the people that you invite into your home. Hmm. If your kid brings home somebody from college, somebody you weren't expecting, come on, you're welcome in our home.
Bring the hospitality.
Okay.
Yep.
So there you have it. My five humble suggestions for imitating in the early Christians' behavior of great hospitality. Now, as you know, it's good to remember we need to be hospitable outside of our homes too. I mentioned that. In our parishes, particularly, in our communities, in our schools, let them know we are Christians by our love and our hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you might give our Facebook page a little love. Check us out and let us welcome you into our Call Me Catholic family. Facebook.com/CallMeCatholic. Please do come in and join us.
We'd hate to have you miss out.
Yeah, we're not going to close the door on anybody. Hey, next up, we are welcoming Tracy Bajot and Tom Morrow from Caritas Communities here in Orange County, a fine organization that develops affordable housing and neighborhoods for residents in need. So stay with us. Some great conversation coming up. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Dr. David Anders.
Our assurance of salvation is grounded in the objective word of promise from Christ, who said to the apostles, whoever sins you forgive are forgiven. Period. End of paragraph.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
EWTN's National Catholic Register is America's most trusted Catholic news source. Try 6 free issues with our compliments. If you like it, you can subscribe later at a 35% savings off the newsstand price. Visit ncregister.com today.
The Reason for Our Hope with Father Larry Richards.
Do you know Christ? Do you know Him intimately? Like you know your wife, like you know your best friend, like you know your children. And if the answer in your heart of hearts is no, I haven't a clue, then you haven't even begun yet to live the purpose of your life. And that's what needs to start happening. You got to deal with that question. It's the most important question of your life. And again, it's going to take you time. You know, how do you fall in love with anybody? Those of you who are married, you didn't get married to your wife by meeting her once and giving her 45 minutes to an hour once a week. You spent time with her. You got to know her. So the same thing has to happen with God. You got to ask that question, and it's going to take you time, but you got to do it. You got to answer that question. My thing is always seek truth, because truth will always lead you to God.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, everyone, and happy third Sunday of Easter to you. I am Peggy Normandin, and today on Call Me Catholic, we're talking about Christian hospitality. In this Sunday's Gospel, Jesus appears to His disciples and asks them for something to eat, that basic. Well, we are surrounded in our communities by friends and family members, neighbors, strangers, who are in need of nourishment and housing. Our guests today have developed an excellent and very successful model for helping individuals and families find and maintain affordable housing options in friendly and nurturing neighborhoods. Tracy Bajot is the Chief Operating Officer of Caritas Communities, a nonprofit organization that is creating vibrant communities for California residents who have limited incomes and are struggling to find a place that they can afford to live in here in this very expensive state. She is joined by Tom Morrow, who is the Chief Mission Officer for Caritas Communities. Tracy and Tom, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning, Peggy.
Hey, so, you know, it is really timely that you're on the show right now because in the news every day here in Southern California, we are hearing about communities of homeless that are trying to find places to live, you know, moving from one riverbed to another. So it's fantastic to think that there are options, there are models for how we can reach out and help people find housing. And what I love about Caritas is that it's not just a place to live, it's almost a lifestyle.
Right.
So let's start with you, Tracy. Give us a little history of Caritas here in Orange County.
Caritas started in 1996. We currently have 23 properties throughout the state of California. In Orange County, we have three locations, and we also have an apartment complex in Dana Point area for homeless.
Okay. So first I want to clarify something. There is a Caritas International. Are you affiliated?
No.
Okay. So this is a completely regional nonprofit organization.
That's correct.
Okay. And you buy up properties, buy up like big properties, and then restore them? How does the real estate work in this?
The way we like to do it most is if we have a property that it's happened in the past where a city owns a property. Cities aren't known for operating mobile home parks. So what we do is purchase the property through the city, and then we continue to operate the parks as affordable housing. All cities have a requirement for a certain number of residential homes. Mm-hmm. And so we purchase the property and then either keep the rents at an affordable level per the city regulations, or we self-impose rent control.
Okay. So most of your properties are manufactured home parks, or what we used to call mobile home parks.
That's correct.
Okay. So you buy the property. Now, in those types of neighborhoods, people bring their own manufactured home in, don't they?
Or yes.
Okay.
So they rent the space and they own their own home.
So you're going in and buying the property. Are you then enabling the residents security and staying there, or do you bring in new residents? I mean, does the property change personality when you take it over?
We like to believe it changes personality because of the way we run our parks. We don't call them mobile home parks. We call them mobile home communities.
Okay.
And we pull folks together, and that's part of what Tom's job is the mission integration. So we like people to feel that they're in a community where they belong.
Okay. So, Tom, let's talk about the community life at a Caritas community.
Okay.
What makes it different from another mobile home park? What makes a mobile home community run by Caritas different from a mobile home park?
My sole job is to work on building community. So we will try to do and work with the folks, the residents directly, to help them start developing and having a say in what the community is going to look like, how it should be run, how it needs to be governed, and how we bring them together. We know that if we can establish pride with people living in a Caritas community, that's going to give them hope from themselves and hope for their kids, mm-hmm, to do and to hopefully go on the affordable housing arena and stay, rather than just stay there, but to really truly move on to a better quality of life. And that's what we try to work on.
Okay, I want to circle back to that because that's a really good subject. And I know you have so many really creative and accessible resources for the residents to use and tap into for their lifestyle. Where does all this funding come from? Which one of you is qualified to answer that question, Tracy or Tom?
So what we do is tax-exempt bond financing. So the revenue that comes in for the rent that's paid, from that revenue, we pay all the operating expenses and the overhead. Then all the proceeds go back into the parks to help keep the landscape looking nice or the asphalt. We also have maintenance assistance programs and rent assistance programs that if a family's going through a hardship and they can't pay their rent for a couple of months, Caritas will step in and pay their rent. if they have a roof leak and they don't have the money to pay for it, Caritas will step in. And that's all from the funds that are raised just from operating the park and putting them back into the communities.
Right.
The word Caritas is associated with the Christian context because I believe it means charity or love.
That's correct.
So does this have a faith-based affiliation?
Well, we're not a faith-based charitable organization. We have our 501c3, but it's strictly that, a charitable organization, but not faith-based.
Okay.
But yes, our board of our directors and most of our management team, we are very Christian in our backgrounds and how we want to present ourselves to the folks.
Okay. So how do the residents respond? Do they get a little intimidated when they know that their park is being repossessed or being purchased by another owner, even if you think this owner has a great reputation? You know, people always get a little nervous when you have a new landlord.
I think just the opposite is true. For the most part, and as Tracy mentioned earlier, we acquire our communities mostly from cities, governments, and that nature. When they hear about Caritas and do their research on Caritas, it almost becomes, I won't say euphoric, but it certainly becomes exciting, and they look forward to us coming in and changing their way of life because we are dedicated to the mission, not just supply affordable housing, but to move it beyond and start creating relationships with each other and with the ownership. So, no, we hit a level of they love the fact that we're coming in.
Okay.
And that really starts from day one, because just before escrow closes on the property, we have what we call a town hall. And we have all the folks come in, and we listen to them. We ask them what their concerns are with the new ownership. We ask what the concerns have been, what the problems in the community have been. And they just really appreciate the opportunity to talk.
What are some of the themes of challenges or obstacles that they faced in living comfortably there before Caritas comes in? I mean, what are some reoccurring themes in mobile manufactured home parks? Abuse by landlords.
Probably not enforcing the rules, I'd say, would be the number one, whether it's letting people park wherever and blocking fire lanes or unruly neighbors, things like that.
Yeah.
I think that's what we hear the most from the folks and the residents who are excited about our presence and us taking over, is that the prior landlord has a great degree of neglect. Neglect for their safety, neglect to their safety and security. So that's one of the reasons why they're so excited about it, because we take safety and security as probably the primary goal of Caritas. Whereas former owners, not so much. Collect the rent, do the minimum required, and then move on. But Caritas comes in and moves it to the next level, which is community.
These are still really expensive pieces of property because they're in the state of California. So how do you pick the property that you want to go in and take over?
I'd like to say that we pick them where the properties where we can make the most impact on.
Like as an example, how many homes are on some of these? Is there the same number of homes typically on all these different parks, or do they vary greatly?
They vary greatly. Our highest number of homes on the park with the most is up in Lancaster. It's got 423 units. We have one community that only has, 40 units. So we vary between 40 and 423.
Wow.
With the average, probably, Peggy, between 150 and 200.
Okay. I know I read that somewhere one of the most prestigious or high-rent mobile home parks or manufactured home parks is in Malibu. That's really, really desirable. I don't suppose Caritas has any interest in taking that one over. Have kind of more.
You never know. We can always be approached.
And also, these mobile home parks seem to be targets for natural disasters, too. They seem to get hit hard by rain and by winds and things like that. So they get ripped up a little bit more. It seems like their properties get, maybe because of the structure of the home or something.
Right. I'm not aware of any properties that we've had that really have hit national disaster level.
Okay.
So we've
well, down in South County, I think during El Nino, there were a couple of mobile home parks that were
washed
sort of
away
wiped
or
out.
Yeah. Wiped out.
What's the largest of these mobile homes? How many people usually live in them? I mean, what's the capacity? Is there a limit to how many residents you want in one of these homes?
Well, that's governed by HCD, which is the
housing
one of those acronyms.
Yes. Yes. So they say no more than two people per bedroom and one in a living room.
Okay.
So a two-bedroom mobile home could have up to five people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we find in many of our communities that there's a lot more people living in the mobile homes,
yeah.
the multi-generation.
And so do you have any involvement in that, if you see that going on in one of your parks?
If we see that going on, we'll try to encourage them. If another mobile home comes on the market, we might try to help them see if we can figure out a way for, let's say, grandma and grandpa to move out, or the kids who have gotten married and stayed living at home,
yeah.
help them get their own
Those
place.
Kids are hard to get rid of in every community. The ones that come back after school, too. It's like, come on.
And I think you hit it earlier, Peggy, that with the housing costs as high as they are in California, we're finding not only children, but relatives
yeah.
are coming in and moving in with them for simply sure. because they can't afford to live anywhere else.
Well, we have been in other parts of the country. You may not be as aware of how, really, in Southern California, the homeless population has been in the news constantly because
right.
they kind of set up camps in different public areas, and there are lots of liabilities with that, you know. And local homeowners have some issues with that, and they kind of get moved. But I know that recently in the city of Costa Mesa, I think the city government said. You can't move a camper, someone that's camped out, unless you have an alternative place for them to live.
Right.
Now, if someone were to come to your organization and say, I'm looking for affordable housing, can you help me find a resource, find a place, could you help place individuals, or you just kind of take over communities and improve their lifestyle?
We take over the communities, improve their lifestyles, but we get calls on a regular basis on folks asking if we have any vacant coaches or someplace where they can move. Sometimes we will, usually not in Orange County. That's pretty impacted. But folks can call a number called 211, and it helps
oh, right.
them with
okay.
all different types of housing accommodation or social services.
Yes, we had a guest on who introduced us to that concept, and I want to reintroduce our listeners to it. 211 is really a true information number.
Right.
You can call 211 and say, I need to find a food bank. I need to find an affordable dental care for my kids. And they will just tell you all these different resources that are available to
right.
them. Well, it's kind of interesting. And I do want to get back after the break. I would like to pursue further how you take one of these communities and parks and turn them into a community. What's the difference between just a neighborhood where people live next to each other and a community where they're actually interacting and there are resources available for them that can enrich their life? And I love the fact that Caritas really does do that. So when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about that. We're going to continue this conversation with Tracy Bajot and Tom Morrow from Caritas Communities here in Orange County, serving Central and Southern California. This is a fine nonprofit organization providing not just housing, but communities with resources and fellowship for California residents who are struggling to keep affordable housing where they're living, to maintain their rent and to keep up with it. So stay with us to learn more from Tracy and Tom about Caritas Communities and how they are impacting the housing crisis here in Central and Southern California. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Catherine Hadro.
Every week, I get together with a team of pro-life experts to shine the light of truth on abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, and the culture of death. We'll help to inform you so you can become engaged in the pro-life movement. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, more than a show, a call to action.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly with Catherine Hadro, Sunday morning at 10:30 on EWTN Radio.
Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and this is an EWTN Bookmark Brief. I just finished talking with Father Joseph Roche, a friend of ours from the Marians of Immaculate Conception, and the book is Fatima, A Pilgrimage with Mary, published by our friends at Marian Press. Tell us, Father Joe, give us an overview of what this book's about.
Well, it's a beautiful picture book, what we call a coffee table book, with some beautiful pictures of the shrine of Our Lady of Fatima, and it tells the story of the apparitions of Our Lady that took place 100 years ago. It tells us about the situation in the world today. And Our Lady is really, in this book, taking us on a pilgrimage, helping us to meet her son Jesus, helping us to recognize that the heart of the world is Jesus and the Eucharist, and that if we open our hearts to him, we can do our part to change the world.
The book is Fatima, A Pilgrimage with Mary by the Marian Press, available through the EWTN Religious Catalog. EWTNRC.com is a place you can find it. This has been a Bookmark Brief. Thanks for stopping by.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows. And I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know, my uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Hello there. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I'm your host, Peggy Normanton, and we are happy to invite you into this great conversation about Christian hospitality, and in particular, how Caritas Communities here in Orange County is helping residents of Northern, Central, and Southern California who are struggling to find affordable housing discover a place where they can live and thrive. Previously, I was sort of limiting it to Central and Southern, but I've been informed during the break that it includes Northern California too. Tracy Bajot is the chief operating officer for Caritas Communities. Tom Morrow is the chief mission officer for this nonprofit organization. So you guys, tell me what started this. I know you brought us back to the history a little bit, Tracy, but what drew you to this organization? What created the impetus for this organization to flourish and start? Whose idea was it?
Started back in 1996 with individuals from Santa Margarita Catholic High School, a bunch of philanthropists who wanted to start giving back. And so they started talking about what's the best way we can give back. And for them, it was what can we do to address the housing needs, even back in 1996,
sure.
And affordable housing especially. So they started looking for different opportunities as a group of individuals. What can we do to really affect life in the affordable housing for the low-income folks? And so that's how they started, and they acquired their first community. It was up in Lancaster, and they acquired the very first one, and I can't remember if it was from the city, Peggy or not, but they acquired it, and from there they moved on.
So when they acquired that first property, what were the first pieces of evidence of change in the community that the community would have experienced when Caritas came in and purchased that park in Lancaster?
I think private ownership, or I would say nonprofit ownership versus government ownership.
So how did that manifest there for them, for the residents? What
for
were
them,
the first signs that they saw?
Right away, we came in our executive level and had a big town hall meeting with the folks and said, how can we help? What do we need to do? Where can we be of the most impact for you? And it was through that interaction with the folks, with the members of the Caritas team, to talk about here's where we need to go, here are the problems we see. That gave us a roadmap with which to follow to say, let's start ticking off these problems. Because as I mentioned earlier, the more that we showed in pride of ownership of the entire property itself, then we found that people would start coming along and take pride of being part of the community and start getting involved and start wanting to be part of what the Caritas difference means.
What were some of the things that they wanted to see in their community that they weren't seeing with the private ownership and that kind of have been reoccurring themes in the future parks that were acquired by Caritas?
I don't think there's any question. The most relevant theme for all of them is, what are you doing for my safety? What are you doing for my security?
Okay.
How are we taking care in the affordable community, especially in high-density homes? I should say not affordable community, but high-density areas like that. There is a high crime rate, and for whatever that crime may be. So sometimes law enforcement will come in and help. Sometimes they ignore, unfortunately, because there's so much going on. So what we would do then is start creating the relationships with local law enforcement, start creating town halls with local law enforcement, start establishing neighborhood watch communities, which they never had before, and start getting them involved. So that was probably their safety, their security. Install lighting. They would like street lights just on the street so it wasn't so dark. Fix some of the streets, some infrastructure.
Do you guarantee to these residents that their rents will not increase over a certain percentage, over a certain amount of time, so they have that security as well? Because that's financial security,
right?
Not just their safety security.
Absolutely, and that's what I spoke of earlier, how we do self-imposed rent control. So even if the city doesn't require it for affordable housing, we'll do it. And I also believe that's one of the first things that the new residents are excited when Caritas comes in, because they know that they're under rent control.
Yeah. So I'd like, Tom, to go a little deeper into how you build community, because I think we can learn not only from what Caritas is doing in these manufactured home parks communities, but also in our own neighborhoods, on our own streets.
What are some of the tools that you guys have put into place that really nurture fellowship, nurture self-improvement, nurture a more wholesome lifestyle for these residents?
The emphasis needs to be not what we think you might want,
but what they want.
Yeah. So one of the things we've done is we established what we call a senior advisory council. So we've got residents out of the five senior communities who two members from each community, and we get together on a video conference with they meet each other from up north to all the way down south.
Oh, from different parks.
Different parks.
Okay.
And we put them together on a video conference, and I will simply moderate and say, what do we need to establish in the senior community? What is most important to you folks? Because I don't live there. And their first subject matter that they wanted to tackle as a community was disaster preparedness.
Oh.
How do we put in disaster preparedness in each of our communities? And what was great is it wasn't all about what's Caritas going to do. What are they going to do in their communities to affect change to keep their residents safe and secure during a catastrophe?
But you're giving them this medium of communication.
Yep.
And facilitating it,
right,
so they can have the organized discussion.
That's
and
exactly
people
right.
probably want to take it into their own hands, but
right.
they need to be led to that someplace.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then we established through the kids, we've established for residents only, seniors in high school, scholarship program. So somebody who may want to move on to the next level of education, which we're highly, highly
encouraging yeah.
and invested mm-hmm. in education. So we put in a scholarship program where the student will have to go ahead and apply for the scholarship, give us their grades, how they've been doing, what are their extracurricular activities, where are they going to go to school, what do they want to do, and they have to write a short essay. Mm. They've got to work for it.
Yeah.
And then we'll go ahead, and we have a certain bucket of funds available for the scholarships, and then we'll dole right. out whatever scholarships we can there. The other thing and the most impactful thing we've done, Peggy, is probably our reading program for the kids.
Mm-hmm. The summer reading program.
The summer reading program.
I read about it. That's awesome.
We're really trying to do our thing to stop the summer slide. So we allow the kids up to seniors in high school to in the summer from June to August 31st, they can select any book they want off a couple of websites that's age appropriate for them. Caritas will fund the purchase of that book, get it to them.
Send it to them, yeah.
Send it
right.
to them. And that's the other part of attacking the summer slide is what we have found is they get to be able to keep the book. They don't have to return it. It's theirs.
It's a pride thing. But and by the way, summer slide is the loss that kids, especially from lower income housing,
that's
or lower
correct.
Income communities, the slide of the loss of academic progress they make during the summer, which upper middle class kids
don't have that. They have access to reading in libraries, the middle class and upper middle class, but the affordable don't.
Right.
So this is our way of helping them try to lessen that sliding. By eighth grade, most affordable housing kids who don't have access to books are still at the sixth grade level of reading and education. So this is our attempt to really attack that.
And how do they have to be accountable for the book? Is there a book report they have to submit?
They have to submit a book report. And again, are we giving four or five
<You're not>.
Questions? We want the discipline. And then once they submit the book report, they bring it into the office. We will go ahead and give the child some sort of minimal prize.
Yeah.
Because behavior rewarded is behavior repeated.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and give them a little
gift certificate or something
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Then they can order another book. And then we have a contest. If they can read at least eight books or more during the summer, we will have a big party for them, and we'll buy something for them as a reward, whether it's a trip for them and them family to a fun park, a water slide park. Anybody who's read eight books or more gets a grand prize at the end of the year.
That is
and
fantastic.
It has been a phenomenal, phenomenal success.
Well, and I noticed that on your website, you show that they also have these little videos that they can tap into about how do I make a new friend at school?
Bullying.
How do I keep up with bullying? Lessons for seniors or little exercises for senior people
right.
that might be experiencing loneliness or
depression.
Want engagement.
Depression.
Right. And they're really charming, well-acted videos. Now, where do they get those? I mean, I go onto your website. Is that where they're supposed to get them? Or do you
they can go. Again, if the residents would like to go, it's a resource. The videos are available online. Some of them we picked up from L.A. Sheriff's Department. And a couple of them we'll pick up off YouTube, but it's the residents who say, you know, we'd like to see some sort of education or video on X, whatever X is. And so if we'll go ahead and put that in for them on their behalf, then tell them every month in our newsletters, by the way, we just posted new And their attention span's only going to be 2 or 3 minute videos.
Well, mine too.
Yeah, and mine too. And so
but I love the one on making new friends because it shows these cute kind of middle school kids. And one of them said, well, a really good way to make friends is ask for help for something. You know, ask directions to something
right.
if you don't know anybody at the school. And somebody might say to you, well, here I'm going there. Come along with me. And the next right. thing you know, you're friends. It's very charming.
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, no, thank you for that.
I really enjoyed that. What kind of staff do you guys have at Caritas that can produce and monitor all these programs?
We have a small but mighty staff.
Clearly.
That's what I like to say.
That's right.
So Tom works with the communities on building the communities, and he's got an assistant. We have another gentleman that does the acquisitions and investments. Then my role is overseeing all the operations. We have a project manager and then support staff. And then Randy Redwitz is the CEO, and he was one of the founding members of Caritas.
Now, do you find that another fruit of this kind of Caritas influence over a community is that the residents get to know each other better? Do you see that there becomes more interaction among the residents? Accountability, maybe?
Yes. I don't know if I would go as far as to say that they're being accountable to each other,
right.
but that's coming.
Yeah.
But if we can, even though we're about, yeah, we're going to go ahead and sponsor a Easter dinner, a Christmas dinner, a Thanksgiving.
You guys do that sometimes?
We do that. Yeah. We'll pay for all that
what?
To bring
in the
them,
in
every
one
community.
Of them.
Oh, wow.
We allocate funds. And that brings them all together. Maybe it's once or twice or three times a year, but at least it brings them together. Serve food and they will come.
Yeah. No kidding.
And they'll come. And so that has been those things have been a massive success.
So I would imagine people hearing you talk about this organization that all over the country, people are saying, I want Caritas to come in and purchase my mobile home community. How do you select the next park that you're going to buy or become involved in? How do these parks qualify for Caritas ownership? I mean, how do you find them?
Well, we don't look for parks that are for high-income folks. We look for parks that are either being ran as an affordable community or we have the ability, based on the number of folks that are there and the rent structure that's coming in, that we can continue to operate as an affordable home community.
Well, where is the largest density of mobile home or manufactured home communities? Is there a place in this state where you see more of them than
for Caritas? Well, you know what, even with or without Caritas being the factor, the Lancaster, Palmdale area, Bakersfield, that area up there seems to be most impacted.
Yeah, because, right. yeah, well, there's land there, too.
There's
so
land there.
People can
right.
buy the homes.
Right.
So you're both Catholic individuals, and you are involved in this organization. How do you feel as Catholics that this, sort of, is a reflection of some of the Catholic values? I know it's not a Catholic organization, but it certainly smacks of a lot of Catholic values and Catholic, as I said in my opening, Christian hospitality, the way you try to make everybody comfortable and feel at home and just make this world a place where we can all live, you know, at whatever we're earning and mm-hmm. whatever age and stage of life we're at. So how does this reflect on your Catholic values?
I would say because we put people first, and it's operated in a manner of kind of like a Christian philosophy where everybody pulls together, everybody's treated equally. There's a sense of belonging, much like you would feel within your own parish.
Mm-hmm. Is there room in this model for profit? Couldn't private landlords also do what you're doing and profit within a reasonable amount? I mean, I don't know why it has to be one extreme or the other. Either nobody makes a profit or somebody makes a lot of profit at everybody else's expense.
Well, they can make a big profit by increasing the rent. But when you have the rent control, there's just not a lot of profit there. And that's where we turn around and put it back into the communities where a for-profit company would be taking those profits and then there's no money left to maintain the communities, which is, as Tom spoke earlier, when we come in and purchase a community, that's one of the things that the residents are so pleased because they've been neglected in so many areas.
Yeah.
So we're more into cash versus profit.
Mm-hmm.
So profit implies maximizing profits for an investor or for somebody. For us, we want to make sure the property will generate cash flow, but the cash flow doesn't go to anybody at a corporate level. It gets generated back into the community for some of the programs, mm-hmm. for some of the infrastructure, to repair streets, things of that nature. So that's what we're about, is making sure we have enough cash generated to help.
Do you have property managers on site that are Caritas people?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So Bercher Anderson Realty Management, they're based out of San Juan, and two of the owners of Bercher Anderson are Catholic and very much involved with the Diocese of Orange. Mm-hmm. And so they work with their employees, either it's the asset managers or the on-site managers, still with that caring Caritas mission in mind.
Mm-hmm. Tracy Bajat, you were are formerly an employee of Christ Cathedral Campus here. You were here on campus in some of our earlier years when we first acquired the property. What were you doing for the campus then, and do you miss it?
I miss it.
I know people miss you here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I miss it. I do. I was here for 4 years. I left about 2 years, almost 2 years ago. I was the chief operating officer. I was here from the day after escrow closed, so I saw lots of changes.
Yeah.
I was involved with the transition from the diocese folks from Marywood down here and the St. Callistus Parish coming over and all the renovations, and it's wonderful. It really came at a good time when prior to that I worked in real estate development and management, and one day I thought, I'm tired of making rich people richer. I need more. So I started volunteering.
That void,
yes. So I started volunteering and then came over to Christ Cathedral. And that's what I love about Caritas, because it almost seems like an extension of my Catholic faith that I'm still helping people and it's not all about the money.
Well, what is your skill set? What is your skill set that you bring to Caritas?
So I've got construction background, management background. I do a lot of strategic planning. That all kind of come together from all the experience I have with real estate development, then use it here at the Cathedral and on a different scale in residential now with the Caritas.
And Tom, you have sort of a business background as well.
I have a business background. I was in retail for over 35 years. I was part owner of a furniture retail show. And I think where that has helped me, Peggy, more than anything, people talk a lot about customer service. What's the differentiator in a retail establishment? Well, we offer customer service. And I think what I have learned over the 35 years of being in retail, customer service is more than just a phrase. You've got to really move to differentiate and be different. And I think that ability and that understanding has helped me come into Caritas in the mode of, you know, these aren't residents for me, they're customers.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I keep my customers? How do I keep them happy? What do I need to do to service customers? And I use the term customers a lot with our community managers.
Which is very respectful, too.
It's respectful. It's what we got to respect the folks and what they're going through in their lives.
Well, I really do think that what you guys have created is a great model, either for a profit or a nonprofit organization, which is other-centered. You know, there are companies that do this. They serve their customers well. They take care of people, and they take care of themselves, too. No one's saying to do this at the expense of your own welfare.
Right.
But I think here in California, we need to be thinking more creatively along those lines. And I think it's awesome that you guys do this.
Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
If some of our listeners, and I'm sure many of them do, would like to know more about Caritas Communities, where would you direct them?
I would direct them, number one, to our website, www.caritascorp.org.
Okay. Caritas, and we'll put that on our Facebook page.
Okay. Or call the office, 727-0568.
Okay, 714?
949.
Okay. And any final words that you'd like people to know about Caritas? That can they do this in their state? Can they get this going in their state too?
Well, I would say if they have a mobile home community that they need help, to contact us directly, or if it's a city or government worker out there that know of affordable home park that could use our assistance, by all means, contact us.
Okay, get ready. Get some people on those phones. I think you're going to get some inquiries. Tracy Bajat, Tom Morrow, thank you for all you do as great ambassadors for the Catholic Church and for our neighbors here in California through Caritas Communities. You model Christian hospitality exactly as Jesus would have wanted us to. So thank you. And keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you, Peggy.
Hey, when we come back, we'll be talking with some second graders about their preparation for First Holy Communion, our church's most extravagant and nourishing gift of hospitality. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normand, and you are listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to this third Sunday of Easter edition of Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normanton, and today on the show we've been exploring the different aspects of Christian hospitality that were modeled by the earliest Christians. Our church grew through hospitality, people opening their homes, putting up strangers, providing for them, welcoming them to their tables. Today, our Mass is the ultimate way our church receives and feeds its flock, and the Eucharist is the finest meal that can be offered. Second graders across the country are now in preparations for their first Holy Communion. And I think it's so charming and edifying to hear a fresh perspective on the gift of communion, and we too often take it for granted. So have a listen to these precious young boys and girls who are excited to be soon receiving the Eucharist for the first time. Let's listen to their expectations and their plans and preparations and hopes for this special blessed sacrament. These are the kids from St. John the Baptist School in the Diocese of Orange.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I'm here at St. John the Baptist Catholic Grammar School in Costa Mesa, California, and I'm about to enter a classroom of second graders who are preparing for their first Holy Communion. Well, boys and girls, thank you so much for inviting me into your classroom this morning. I know you have a very, very special day coming up, your first Holy Communion in just a couple of weeks. I will be praying for you. I know you're working very hard to prepare for that and that you've already made your first reconciliation. So my first question is this. What was that first confession experience like?
I felt good after.
Why did you feel good?
Because I didn't have any sins on my soul anymore.
Did you have a lot going in?
Yes. Really scary.
Was it scary? Why was it scary?
Because I was really shy.
You were shy? Was the priest friendly, though, to you?
Yes.
And did he forgive your sins?
Yes.
Well, that's the important part.
A little scary.
I was scared, but then I knew what to do, so I wasn't scared anymore.
Yeah, preparation is half of it, right? If you know what you're going to say and how to do it going in there, it makes it a lot easier.
I was scared, but then I got over it.
I was scared at first, but at the end, I felt really great.
It was scary at first, but then I felt better when I said my sins.
Yeah. Did he forgive you?
Yes.
I love it when that happens.
A little scary. It was sort of scary because I sort of forgot what to say, and then I just sort of froze for a second because I was sort of like nervous in the middle.
Fear seems to be the reoccurring theme here.
When I was sitting in the church and everybody else was going in, I was sitting with a couple of my friends, and when I saw them going in, I was a little bit scared, but once I got in there, I felt pretty good, but like in the middle of it, I kind of forgot what to do.
Did the priest help you? Did he remind you what you're supposed to do?
Yes, he did.
And do they have a printed copy of the act of contrition in there for you?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, we call that a cheat sheet.
Yeah.
It made me happy because I wasn't scared because I had my favorite father doing it with me.
Did you go face to face or did you stand behind a wall?
I went face to face with him.
So it was like having a conversation, right?
Yeah.
I was happy.
Before or after?
After.
Okay. Are you still happy?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's great is it's going to be there for you again whenever you need it.
Yeah.
It was scary at first, but then when he said, my sins are away, it was really touching.
The time when I was going to say my sins, I didn't really want to do it because I didn't want to look at the sins I had.
After I felt really happy, I think it was because I didn't have any sins after. I couldn't stop smiling.
It was fun. Then after, I wanted to do it again.
Well, did you go back in there?
No.
Well, you have to have more sins to go back in, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've got a smile on your face, so it looks like you don't do very much sinning.
Kind of.
It was awesome.
So now I'm asking you, what are you doing to prepare for your first Holy Communion next month?
I've been preparing, like praying every night and morning and eating healthy foods, so it helps me a lot. Because whenever I have a pure soul, then it's going to help me when I have the body in Christ.
I'm ordering my dress, and I think it's coming next week, and I'm ordering a banner, too.
Can you describe your dress for me?
It's mostly white, and it has flowers on it.
We've been watching videos about Holy Communion.
I'm saying the rosary every day before we go to school and right before we go to bed.
I've been learning from my older brother, and I've been praying every morning.
Has he set a good example for you?
Yes.
That sounds like a good big brother.
I've been using food to practice.
So you've been doing pretend communion, right? I think a lot of boys and girls do that. I remember doing that.
Me and my dad are thinking of, before the first communion, we're going to buy me a new shirt and pants for the communion, for my first communion, because my old one doesn't fit me anymore, so we're sort of ordering it.
Will you wear a tie too?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the hard part. It goes around your neck. You're not used to that, right? But you're going to look very handsome.
I've been learning, what's going to happen my first communion, when Jesus comes into my life and stuff, into my soul.
What do you think? It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll pray for you.
Okay.
I read part of the Bible every night.
What part? Is there a part that's special to you?
The Last Supper.
Oh, the Last Supper, yes. Well, that was the first Holy Communion. That was the institution of the Eucharist, right?
I've been planning my meal for my party after first Holy Communion.
Am I invited?
I've been choosing, how I should make my banner, and my grandma already got me a dress and a veil.
Oh, your grandma got it for you. Did you get to help pick it out?
No. I think on Saturday my mom and I are going to Joe's A Bank for a suit and a bow tie.
Oh, a bow tie? That's awesome. And Joseph A. Bank, you'll be styling, man. We just did a little plug for Joseph A. Bank. They may call you to give them an endorsement, right?
I'm really excited for my first Holy Communion because when I'm over with it, and I'll be able to go with my brothers and sisters for the rest of my life and stuff until they die or something.
Well, that is a wrap for this week's Call Me Catholic. Barbara McGuigan is up next with The Good Fight. Do join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.